where we go from here. And first of all, we'll want to always start by saying thank you to all the supporters and for all the voters that turned out in record numbers this last cycle. That is something we should all be proud of as Republicans and Democrats, that, you know, the democracy is still very vibrant in America. And with the record amount of turnout, I was glad to see voter participation as high as it was. And that is a good thing for America's future. And I also took away from this election cycle that the extremism is being rejected on the left and the right in regards to the outcomes of the election, in regards to the Senate, apparently, and I'm firmly confident that the Senate will be in Republican hands after the runoffs in Georgia occur, that we have a tighter majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. And obviously, you saw our statement in regards to the president-elect, Joe Biden, coming into office. And I think that is attributable, that result, to folks saying that the extremism of the hard left is not something that they were going to widely support across the country. And we've learned the lessons of the extremism on the hard right from 2010 and beyond. And so I believe we are positioned in regards to the Problem Solvers Caucus to be a linchpin of governing in the next Congress. And we were talking today on CNBC about our thoughts of going forward. And I think there's tremendous amounts of opportunity in regards to the Problem Solvers Caucus with a approximate 10-seat majority-minority delta between the two parties in the House of Representatives in particular. For the group of us of 40 to 50 strong, after all the dust settles from these elections, to come together, and we have now the deep muscle memory of working together in the Problem Solvers Caucus to be a force that will influence the agenda in the House. Because remember, it takes 218 votes to get on a bill. It takes 218 votes to pass a bill in the House of Representatives. And I think us in the Problem Solvers Caucus are united in our commitment to governing and our commitment to stand up for the American people and get things done that are compromised positions, where 80% is not a defeat when it comes to a legislative proposal, but a victory that allows you to secure that victory and then continue the debate going forward for additional relief down the road. And so as we go into this next congressional session, I look forward to working and to find common ground. I look forward to making sure we stand up to the extremism that was rejected, in my humble opinion, at the ballot box this November, and that what we represent in the Problem Solvers Caucus is starting to grow in the Senate with our Senate partners that are coming together in putting American solutions forward as the agenda going into this next cycle. And so with that, I can see the top of the list on the upcoming agenda being getting a COVID-19 stimulus package done, getting the vaccine fully distributed. And we had great news out of Pfizer here just 24 hours ago. And I am very confident that that will be the ultimate solution when it comes to COVID-19, getting that vaccine out and about and distributed to the American population. And then we can take on issues like infrastructure, which to me should be one of the top priorities that brings people together in Congress, and that we all know what needs to be done. We know the policy of what we can support in a bipartisan way. And I would hope that that could be one of the first items beyond COVID-19 that we could accomplish as a top priority in the next congressional session to get something done on the issue of infrastructure. So with that being said, let's open it up to questions.
Great. Thanks, Tom. All right, let's start with Christina Peterson from the Wall Street Journal. Did you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Good morning. Congressman, I wanted to ask you about the latest on the stimulus front on coronavirus relief, and specifically Majority Leader McConnell has been pushing their package, which is around $650 billion. Do you think that is a sufficient size?
Yes, so I think, and we've been talking to our Senate partners and Obviously, a lot's going to depend on where the administration comes down and the, you know, the president in his willingness to sign a package into law. And so I think, you know, on the side of COVID-19 stimulus in the lame duck session, I think there is a targeted relief bill. It's going to be smaller than what was on the table before the election at $1.8 trillion. I think you're looking at things like Paycheck Protection Program. I think you see some relief when it comes to unemployment because we still, even though it's going in the right direction, still pretty high number. A lot of people out there still suffering. And then I think you see some targeted relief in some specific areas of the economy that are really struggling, be it airline, be it restaurants, be it venues, some other areas that in particular have been acutely hit as a result of COVID-19. So I think that number is in the ballpark of something that could be passed relatively quickly if all the parties are in good faith working together to get that relief flowing out the door.
And could I just ask, you know, why is it that a relief package is going to be smaller than what was on the table before the election? What has changed?
Well, I think you got a whole new dynamic. Obviously, you know, I think folks were pushing against doing a package before because they didn't want the president to have a win going into the election. And I think you still have the same exact dynamics now that the, you know, and they were thinking the Senate was going to flip hands, and now it's not going to. So I think everyone's realizing the outcome of the election is going to dictate. You're going to have to negotiate with Mitch McConnell. You're going to have to negotiate with the House of Representatives, and you're going to have to negotiate with President Trump and to get it done before the next administration comes in. And so I think at the end of the day, that is going to force a more targeted relief package, and that's just the reality of the situation. That's why I told folks before. That if you walk away from this deal, it's going to be difficult to get it done in lame duck. And if it is something we get done in lame duck, it's going to be much smaller than what maybe they were looking at originally prior to the election.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. All right, let's go to Christina Marcos with The Hill. Did you have a question?
Hi, Congressman. Thanks so much for doing the call. I know that you've congratulated President-elect Biden on a projected victory in the presidential election, but I'm wondering what you think of congressional leaders who have yet to acknowledge the situation and what you think of President Trump continuing to pursue lawsuits in the states that have close margins.
Yeah, no, I mean, I respect the president's right to pursue those lawsuits, but I also recognize that if you look at our 200-year-plus history and you look at the numbers of those lawsuits, that, you know, Joe Biden has rightfully earned the title of being the projected president-elect, and that should be recognized, in my humble opinion. That's why we issued that statement, and we, you know, we're one of the first to do that, and I think that's the right thing to do. That is what we have prided ourselves on as a country, is we have a transition of power. And we go through the process, though, and that's what's happening with the administration, and recognizing that they have the right to that review process. But that being said, you know, I am definitely eager to move forward in the sense of our problems in America need to be addressed, and I am eager to get to work on those problems, and I just recognize the situation as to where it stands today.
At what point, though, do you think President Trump should move on from these lawsuits if he's not able to produce any evidence of voter fraud?
Well, you know, absolutely. I mean, once that right is pursued by the president, and if the evidence is not there, then I think it's incumbent upon us as a Republican Party and the president himself to recognize that what we pride ourselves in America is a peaceful transition of power. And I'm confident the president will do that and will recognize that if the lawsuit does not have, is not substantiated by the courts in regards to the claims, that we will do what we do best in America and lead the world with our democratic process rather than having some sort of disruption in regards to what has been a rich 200-year plus history of transition of power.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks for saying. All right, let's go to Karen James with CNBC. Did you have a question, Karen?
Hi there, can you hear me?
I can, Karen, go right ahead.
Okay, great. Congressman, I was just wondering how much do you think it will take to get that infrastructure bill off the ground? I know you're one of the leaders of the Progressive Caucus, but do you see like a place where we can easily make that happen in 2021?
Well, first of all, I'm not a leader of the Progressive Caucus, just to clarify the record there, but I am a leader of the Problem Solvers Caucus, and we have done yeoman's work.
I'm so sorry. I meant Problem Solvers.
That's okay.
Sorry about that.
I'm not a problem. What we have done is yeoman's work on infrastructure package. And so the policy of an infrastructure deal of about $1 trillion is something that I think is widely accepted as to what needs to be done, the amount that is needed in order to rebuild America's infrastructure. And given the nature of potentially where the COVID-19 stimulus package that was being considered previous to the election, that won't be there, in my humble opinion, in lame duck session, you could replace those dollars with $1 trillion of infrastructure fiscal stimulus. And so I think there's using that runway for infrastructure, I think is something I've been arguing and maybe already floating the trial balloon of to my colleagues since the election occurred, is that if we're going to do and need fiscal stimulus, why don't we make that investment then in America's infrastructure? And so I think there's large bipartisan support for leading with that. And I would also do it on the context of lesson learned with the prior administration in regards to, we led with healthcare. And I think there's a lot of folks that on the Republican side, I know of conversations that I've been involved with, where we talked about maybe we should have led with infrastructure and rather than healthcare. And I think that lesson is being taught here as we go into the next administration. And I think that is a uniting policy, not a dividing policy like healthcare was.
And thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Karen. All right, let's go to Jerry with Buffalo News. Do you have a question, Jerry?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Doing well, Jerry. How you doing?
Good. I wanted to talk to you about the growing coronavirus issue in New York State and Western New York in your district, and also what President-elect Biden has been suggesting. He's already put together a task force of scientific experts trying to figure out, what to do about this. There's talk of kind of a unified public health message, maybe through the governors encouraging people to wear masks. He's already encouraged people to wear masks. And there's talk of a more national effort on testing and tracing. Given what's happening in upstate New York now, do you think that this approach that President-elect Biden is suggesting is a good one? And if not, how would you suggest it should be different?
Well, what I see in that proposal is very much similar to what Operation Warp Speed President Trump was including, and now I think you got a tone shift in regards to what President-elect Biden is bringing to the table in regards to the coronavirus situation, and now also where we see such good news on a vaccine, and you see the vaccine that is becoming more and more of a reality each and every day, and I think that bodes well for us to adopt those policies to get us to that vaccine perspective. And Jerry, I'll just offer you, as we monitor the COVID-19 situation in the district, it is, we're doing our regular hospital calls, our nursing home calls, our public health officials calls continuously as we speak. The good news is because of the lessons learned from COVID-19 from March and February, we're getting better treatments. We got better therapeutics approved by the FDA under emergency authorization uses, and even techniques of treatment, rolling patients over onto their stomachs as opposed to treating them on their backs, has been a significant, all of these have been significant improvements in the treatment of COVID-19, and in also the mortality rates are significantly improved from where they were. And so I think we're going into this next wave of COVID-19 positives in a much better position when it comes to PPE supply chains, lessons learned, that we are, you know, dovetailing nicely with the strategies that have been deployed, and, you know, with President-elect Biden coming in with stressing the social distancing, the masking, and other issues that are out there. I think that's an enhancement, and that will also get us quicker to the final and ultimate solution to this COVID-19 situation, which is that ultimate solution of a vaccine.
Okay. Are there any particular parts of your district where you have particular concerns regarding COVID? And is there anything overall you'd like to just mention to your constituents about, you know, about this?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously we're watching Chemung County, where we have some orange zones and we have some yellow zones in Steuben County that are still problematic when it comes to the numbers. You know, we're seeing some spikes in other areas, but those two areas in particular are coming back that are causing us to take a very close look at the numbers. And what we're doing is we're making sure that they're working together when it comes to, because we're also hearing the staffing shortage issue rear its head again. And so we're connecting folks with staffing agencies. And what we want to make sure is the entire district, as well as Western New York, knows that we're in this together, and that if there's anyone out there that needs staffing, that needs any of the PPE supply chains that they're running into problems with, please do not hesitate to reach out to our office, because we have learned the lessons from February and March, and if they need help, we are here to assist them.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
Yep, thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. All right, I believe we have Gary from WROC on. Did you all have a question?
Yes, hi. I hope you can hear me. Thank you for taking my question. Question is, as you reveal your plans going forward as a Problem Solvers Caucus, I was wondering, excuse my ignorance on this, but what's the, if any, connection with the Biden transition team? You work together? Are you part of it? Or how do you plan to work with that?
Well, you know, obviously we are a bipartisan group of approximately, we're in the range of 40 to 50. We still have some dust to settle on some of the elections, particularly on the Democratic side. And there are many folks that are in the Problem Solvers Caucus that just have a natural relationship, especially on the Democratic side, with the Biden administration. And so the line of communications are open and have been extended to not only do we work in obviously with the Trump administration, as we've done with the COVID-19 stimulus negotiations up to this point in time that have been recognized. But we've also, you know, using our relationships as kind of the go-to bipartisan group on the Hill, we have naturally become a source of communication. But I'll defer on that question. More appropriately, it needs to be, I think, given to Josh Gottheimer, who chairs the Democratic side of the aisle.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. All right, let's go to Terry Frank. Do you have a question, Terry?
Yes, good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning, Terry. Good morning.
I did want to get some additional thoughts from you regarding your own race with Tracy Matrano. I know that last week she said she understood the math and knew where the math was, but she wasn't going to concede until after the final amounts of votes were tallied. What's your understanding? I mean, even with the absentees, I don't think there's enough to appreciably change anything, is there?
No, I mean, if you do them as she recognized and we recognized, even if she were to get 100% of the absentee ballot, the math still does not support, which is impossible, and to get 100% of absentee ballots. So, you know, obviously she has a right to continue, just as the president, as President Trump has a right to continue to make sure that all the votes are tallied. And I, you know, I support that and I recognize that. But at the end of the day, also, I think we have to continue, we have to move forward. And so I wish Tracy all the best. I respect anyone who's run for office, and I extend that respect to Tracy, and I wish her the best in her future endeavors.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. All right. Let's go to Lucas Day with Finger Lakes Radio. Do you have a question, Lucas?
Hi, Congressman. Good morning. I just wanted to get your reaction to Governor Cuomo's comments yesterday about the potential vaccine from Pfizer. And even though he tries not to politicize it, it sure sounds like he is politicizing it, at least in his appearance on Good Morning America. Just your reaction to that.
Completely irresponsible of the governor to make the comments he did on Good Morning America. You know, just because it's President Trump upon which the vaccine is coming out, and Operation Warp Speed has produced this game-changing announcement yesterday. We should be uniting and applauding American ingenuity and innovation and coming up with a vaccine that Pfizer has demonstrated is 90% effective. And it's shameful to see the governor try to discredit Pfizer and the vaccine. And I'm concerned that by discrediting the vaccine, Governor Cuomo is going to potentially risk lives, because now he's discrediting the ultimate solution to COVID-19, which is going to save thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives, because the vaccine is going to provide that protection to those individuals. And by discrediting the vaccine like Governor Cuomo has done over the last 24 hours, there's going to be a lot of people that listen to Governor Cuomo, and now will go without the vaccine. And he's putting those lives right at risk because of that rhetoric.
After posting your statement Saturday on social media regarding Joe Biden and the media calling him the next president-elect, just reading some of the feedback from some of your constituents, wondering where comments were from President Trump after the election supporting him and his cause in terms of making sure there was no voter fraud, et cetera. What's your response to that? Why was there such a delay in comments regarding what he's looking into, and why wasn't there public support prior to Saturday for the president?
I supported the president, and I do support the president. The president knows I was one of the first to endorse him and continue to support the president in his right to that review process, just like we articulated here today again. But I also recognize that the vote tallies of the election, that the election is projected to have President-elect Joe Biden come into office. And I think just out of deference and respect for that position of being the president-elect, the right thing to do is to recognize that. And so I take the criticism from those that disagree with our position, and I respect that criticism, and I've heard that criticism loud and clear. But at the end of the day, this is our democracy, and just like living through Bush Gore and the issues there, we have to move forward. And I recognize that this process is where we're at the stage of having President-elect Biden being coming into office, and absent some compelling evidence through the litigation process, I recognize our statement is the correct statement of having President-elect Biden congratulated for this this result.
One final question. Does it concern you about these allegations, especially in Pennsylvania, where pollsters, polling witnesses were not able to do their jobs, where the polling was not open to these people and to the public, if you will, that it was done behind closed doors? Does that concern you as an elected official, and more importantly, I guess, as a resident of the United States?
Yeah, sure. Anytime you have concerns about process of our democratic election process, they're always concerning. But that's why you have a litigation review. That's why you have independent Democrat and Republican mechanisms in place to review and ensure the integrity of the process. And that is what the president is going through. And that is why that process will take its course, and rightfully so. But at the same time, that process requires hard evidence, and that is what those processes of review rely upon. And so let's look at that evidence, but let's also recognize that this election is at the point where it is clear to me, looking at the numbers that have been produced, that we have President-elect Biden coming into office, and that absent something coming through on that litigation process occurring, that is what is going to occur here come in January.
As always, thank you, Congressman.
Yep, thanks, Lucas.
Thanks, Lucas. All right, let's go to Jason Sample. Do you have a question, Jason?
Yes. Tom, good morning. Thanks for taking time out to talk with us. My question is just about the Problem Solvers Caucus with Joe Biden appearing to be the president next year. A lot of folks say he strikes a more moderate tone than especially the other two dozen candidates who also ran for the Democratic nomination for president. Does that open the door for more people joining the Problem Solvers Caucus, more members of Congress? Right now you're at 50. That's only about 11.5% of the total members of Congress. Do you see that growing and becoming more influential than you already are in the next term?
So two answers to that question, Jason. One, we have had a tremendous amount of interest in joining the caucus, and so I do see an opportunity. Obviously, we're going to lose some members on the Democratic side, and we lost some on the Republican side to retirements and some other. And so we're going to have to regroup and go from there. But we are getting tremendous amount of interest in joining the caucus. Remember, you have to go through the process and make the commitments to join the caucus. You don't just put it on your resume. You have to go to the membership, and the membership has to approve you being part of this group. But most importantly, yes, we want larger numbers, but do not lose sight, Jason, of the 10-seat projected majority-minority difference in the House. Because with 10 seats determining whether you get 218 votes to get on a bill in the House, because remember how the House works. You need the process of 218 votes in order to take up a piece of legislation or to reject a piece of legislation or pass a piece of legislation. So process and substantively, there's only a 10-seat margin of error that the Speaker is going to be dealing with. And I will tell you, we in the Problem Solvers Caucus have already demonstrated that we are now a mile deep when it comes to our commitment to governing. And we have already taken on the hurricane force winds, given the change to the House rules that we've done, given the change to the humanitarian aid package, where we delivered $12 billion to the southern border for that humanitarian crisis over 72 hours. And those are just two examples of many that we have done, that we are positioned very well to have more than 10 seats, significantly more than 10 seats, that are willing to disrupt the status quo and tell leadership and the Speaker's office that, you know what, we are here to work with you, but we are also here to make sure that we are moving forward on an agenda that's going to get accomplished something rather than just play partisan politics.
Okay, very good. Thanks for the insight. Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, Jason. All right, let's go to Dave Rowling. Do you have a question, Dave?
Yeah, Tom, congratulations on your reelection. I wanted to get your thoughts on maybe your goals for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I will tell you, the goals simply start with the top priority, getting COVID-19, not only a stimulus package done as quick as we possibly can, because the need is acute and needs to be done, but get that vaccine out there, approved and distributed to the American public, and then get the economy humming again. And that, I think, could come from a robust infrastructure package. I think it's time also to address some of our immigration policies that need to be updated, and there's a compromise position there. Joe Biden has indicated, the president-elect has indicated that he wants to take on these issues and he wants to solve these issues in a pragmatic way. We have a group here in the Problem Solvers Caucus that is eager to take on these issues. So I would go with infrastructure following COVID, and then taking on issues of immigration, but maybe before that, a police reform bill that we have worked together on the Problem Solvers Caucus with Tim Scott and Cory Booker now in the Senate, kind of having conversations out of our conversations with the Congressional Black Caucus that could get enacted in a bipartisan way.
Okay, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Dave. All right, let's go to Rick Miller. Do you have a question, Rick?
Good afternoon, Congressman.
Good afternoon, Rick.
Congratulations.
I appreciate that, Rick. Thank you.
Say, I just two quick questions. One is an infrastructure bill. What, and you've heard me say this before, but what about Route 219, Congressman? It's been a more than a generation in the waiting. It's more like a lifetime. What do you see happening there?
Well, and, you know, there's twofold answers to that question. One, I don't know if there's going to be any way to get to any type of specific designated type of congressionally directed spending into an infrastructure package. You know, there's been some talk about that as a potential reform to allow Congress to weigh in on these specific projects that has been taken away in regards to these issues. So if that is brought back into the table, and that's a question for the speaker to answer whether or not the congressionally directed spending would occur. If that's not the case, then the plan that I've always been supportive of is to make sure that significant projects like Route 219 get the benefit of having that thumb on the scale when it comes to the formulas for rural projects in particular that show that huge return on investment that 219 does. And we're going to continue to make sure that that type of significant project gets the benefit of the formula calculation to put it in the best position to be successful. And so that's from a national perspective of what we can do to help 219 to get completed. And then also using our relationships with the Seneca Nation, because, you know, that's always been kind of one of the local issues that needs to be addressed, and having a collaborative approach with the Seneca Nation to make sure that their cultural issues, their environmental sensitivity issues are respected as we go forward with the completion of 219.
And there's a new president with the Seneca Nation. This might be an opportunity to get that moving, do you think?
I do. And, you know, we met with the Seneca Nation right at the end of October, talking to them in preparation for both not only their transition, but potentially our reelection into Congress. And so we have a very long, deep relationship with the nation, and I truly do enjoy and respect that relationship with the nation. And so having that sovereign type of relationship with the nation, I think, is going to serve us well. A multitude of issues, not just 219, but working together in regards to some of their top priorities. Things like the special diabetes program for their population, as well as investments that they're looking at in regards to future opportunities. We were, you know, even talking to them in regards to Amazon when that was lost up at Grand Island. And so we're working all angles on the Amazon project to keep that alive in the district and in the region. And so, you know, those are just off the top of my mind ideas and issues that we've been discussing with the nation long term, where I think we could work together. And I think that collaborative approach with the nation is bearing fruit more and more as it gets deeper and deeper.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, Rick. All right, let's go to Matt Hummel. Did you have a question, Matt?
Yes, I do, Congressman. My question for you is, first off, I know obviously you're in the House and Joe Biden served in the Senate, but did you guys ever work on any projects together? And also, do you have confidence that you'll have some sort of working relationship with the president-elect come January?
We did. Probably the best example of what the vice president and I worked on was the advanced manufacturing bill that we did with Joe Kennedy. That's a Revitalize American Manufacturing Innovation Act, and it led to the photonics site up in Rochester. And if you go back in the record, you can see the commentary where Joe Biden came to Rochester, where we announced with Louise Slaughter the selection of that photonics advanced manufacturing site. And we were recognized by the vice president for our work and collaboration with them in regards to that effort. And so that is, you know, that's a public recognition of our relationship that I can point to off the top of my head. And so we worked with the vice president over the years in Congress, and he had a very open door policy. And I will tell you that that wasn't the same for President Obama. And President Obama did not have an open door policy with, in my humble opinion, either side of Congress. Why he was in the Oval Office as President Obama did not, I think, and members on both sides, I will attest to this, did not have as much of a direct working relationship with regular members of Congress, particularly in the House of Representatives. And so Joe Biden really took up that space and spent a lot of time with us as members of Congress rather than President Obama. So based off of those relationships and those that background, you know, I take the president-elect at his word in the sense of he wants to bring the country together. He wants to work with Congress. And I extend to him my open hand to work with him as a proud Republican and him a proud Democrat to let's start solving problems for America. And I'll be the first one to offer that hand of good faith work that we can do together.
All righty. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. All right, folks, that should bring us to the close. Thanks for joining us this lovely Tuesday, and we will be in touch.
All right. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. Talk to you next week. Thank you.